Hi, this is Reverend Kip Laxon. I'm the senior pastor at Muncie Memorial United Methodist Church in Johnson City, Tennessee. And this is my podcast of my weekly sermons. I've entitled this podcast, Preaching Now. Thank you for joining me, and I take you now to the live worship service at Muncie Memorial. Preaching Now with Pastor Kip Laxon.
A couple weeks ago, I attended a pastor's conference at Duke University, at Duke Divinity School. I've been to this conference several times, but this was the first one that they had hosted since the pandemic, and I was excited to go back and see old friends. I was particularly excited about the opening keynote speaker on that first Sunday evening, a woman named Kate Bowler. Kate Bowler grew up in a religious family, attending church on a regular basis. She had a lot of goals in life. She was a very driven individual. She received a degree from Yale University and went on to receive her PhD in religion from Duke University at Duke Divinity School. She then was appointed a professor in Christian history and religion at Duke Divinity School and had a wonderful husband and little child, and things were going well. All of that accomplished by the age of 35. When, at that young age of 35, having accomplished so much, obviously so smart, intelligent, plugged in, and now passing along her knowledge and ability, one of the most popular lecturers on the campus of the Divinity School, she found out that she was cancerous. At 35 years of age, she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. This PhD from Duke, this graduate of Yale, this great professor. And she began to go through all of the struggles that we have when we are hit with something unexpected. Why? Why me? Why did this happen? Is God trying to teach me something? Is God trying to show me something? Why? Wherefore? How come? All the questions, you know them. They're a part of our lexicon, our living as human beings. How do we deal with the trouble, the struggles? She had all those emotions. She got angry at God for a while. Don't sit there and say you haven't. We all have. I have. Got frustrated with unanswered prayer for a while. Absolutely. That's our story. She decided to channel her struggle. So she wrote a book, something professors do. She wrote a book, and it became an instant New York Times bestseller. She entitled her book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. Everything happens for a reason and other lies I've loved. She would say that she had often said that. Everything happens for a reason until the reason happened to her. She had often found that little cliche useful to explain the unexplainable, but now not so much. Out of her writing and her lectures and her ability to speak, she still struggles with the cancer. She is not cancer-free, and yet she continues to teach, she continues to lecture, she continues to speak literally all around the world. One of the most demanded persons in her field. She says she learned two things in writing that book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. Two key things that she came to grasp with. The first one was this, that yes, everything does happen for a reason of some sort. But most of the time when people say that or throw that phrase out there, they're implying that somehow, some way, God is behind what is happening. What we cannot explain, what we cannot figure out, that God is somehow behind that, that the reason for everything is God. She came to the place where she had to recognize God did not give her cancer. And yet she did not have the answers that she really wanted, but yet to ascribe everything to God was to place yourself in a conundrum. And what was the conundrum? That if everything happens for a reason and that God is behind everything that happens, then God is the author of both good and evil. That God is the author of both light and darkness. That it was a part of God's will for the beautiful baby to be born that we hold in our arms. And it was a part of God's will for Hamas to attack the Israelis. You could go on with the analogies. She came to the place where she said, that cannot be true. That cannot be how God works in the world. Yes, there is a reason for everything, but God is not the reason for everything that happens in the world. The second thing that she said she learned, that she grappled with, was this. And it was that when she wrote her book, Everything Happens for a Reason, and Other Lies I Have Loved, that she had to come to the place where she recognized that she doesn't have all the answers of why certain things happen, and that it was not for her to figure out that God's will, I like how she put this, God's will was not like a Rubik's Cube. Remember those? That if you just get all the colors to line up, there you have it. That God's will was not a mystery for us to solve, a riddle for us to solve, but was a way for us to see that God was at work in ways we could not imagine. Think of the story that comes from the gospel accounts today. As I continue this very important sermon series, the Bible tells me so, half-truths, cliches, and other misnomers. Have you ever said that before in trying to explain the unexplainable? Well, everything happens for a reason. Has someone said that to you? Probably so. We're probably all in the same boat. It's important for us to grapple with these issues so that we can drive to a deeper place in our faith. The story of the gospel account, Jesus is walking along with his disciples, and there is a blind beggar sitting on the side of the road. And one of the disciples says to Jesus, now stay with me on this. I know you heard it read, but I want to share something about important about it. One of the disciples said to Jesus, is this man blind because of some sin he committed or his parents committed? Jesus said, no. Now, what was that about? In the days of Jesus, it was very common for people to believe that a person who was blind or had some other physical challenge, it was because they had done something wrong in their life or because their parents or one of the previous in their generation. It was called a generational sin. That if I did something heinously wrong or committed some egregious sin, it could bear out in my children in some physical abnormality, in some physical challenge. Think about what that means. So Jesus, did this man sin or did his parents? Is that why he was born blind? And Jesus says, no. And then he says this, this happened so that God's glory or God's works might be revealed. And then what does Jesus do? This is kind of strange. He spits in the dirt and he makes little mud pies and he puts them on the man's eyes and tells him to go wash in the public bath. He does, and he's able to see. And then all the people are like, wait a minute, who are you? What's going on? Well, I'm not sure. He doesn't even know exactly what has happened. You see, in Jesus' world, everything happened for a reason. This man was blind because he had sinned or his parents had sinned. It's not that much difference in the way some people think in our world today. I've got a confession to make to you. I live in this tension between the good and loving God I know and why bad things happen to good people. I cannot reconcile those two. I cannot. I have tried. I have worked at it. I've looked at it from a philosophical point of view, from a theological point of view, from a biblical point of view. I can't reconcile them. Why there is, I know, a God that is good and loving and seeks the best for us. And at the same time, why there's tragedy, why there's suffering, why bad things happen to good people. I live in that tension. And yet in that tension, I've become aware of God's presence in my life in a way like I probably would not have. Perhaps that's what Kate Bowler is saying when she wrestles with the cancer in her body and yet refuses to ascribe it to God or to God's will. What I've done in my life is that I've come to a place where I want to keep some things in the forefront. As I look at all that happens in the world, and as I seek to believe and be faithful and follow the loving and good God that I know to be true, how do I keep that balance? How does that tension not tear me apart? How is my faith not destroyed? What keeps me from throwing in the towel and just walking away from it all? Well, there are some things that I seek to affirm, and I want to share these with you. There are three of them, and perhaps they'll be helpful to you. Maybe, maybe not, but I put them out there in a very honest and open way to say, these things have helped me live within the tension we all live in, the good and loving God, and the great tragedies that mark our world. the unexplainables, the things that we don't have the answers to, and yet the deep faith that we want to express. How do we live in that tension? Well, here's the first. The first thing that I keep in front of me, I try to keep it in front of me at all times when I'm dealing with this issue. First is this. Don't confuse the facts of life with the acts of God. Don't confuse the facts of life with the acts of God. Kate Bowler would say it was a fact of life that she had cancer, not an act of God. But in our humanity, trying to explain the unexplainables, we often ascribe it to God because we have nowhere else to go. We have nowhere else to turn. We don't know what else to do. And we confuse the facts of life with the acts of God. I've done it many times, only to have to step back and say, wait a minute, I'm not sure that's really what God is up to. I'm not really sure that's about God. This is more a fact of life. Illustration. You remember back in August of 2005 when Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans and the coast? And of course, then the worst came after the hurricane. The levees began to break and all the flooding that happened and the horrible images on the news and television, and houses destroyed and people's lives. One of the things that still just rubs me the wrong way is how some religious leaders try to make sense publicly about the hurricane. Now, I'm not going to name names, but I will if you push me. But I just want to call out some of the things they've said. This one particular religious leader that speaks to millions of people via television and social media said that Hurricane Katrina happened because there was so much sin in the city of New Orleans. Well, how do you measure that? How do you distinguish one city from another? What do? Go around measuring the levels of sin in the cities and figuring out which one's worse, and God says this one's worse, and so I'm going to slam it with a hurricane? Come on. Another religious leader said that Hurricane Katrina happened because of some decisions that had been made by the Supreme Court. So now wait a minute. So God waits on actions of the Supreme Court to then say, gotcha. Really? And then another, just unbelievable. I still cannot connect the dots on this. Another well-known religious leader on national television claimed that Hurricane Katrina came to New Orleans because Ellen DeGeneres, who is a native of New Orleans, emceed the Emmys that particular year. I can't connect that. I can't put that together. But what I can say to you is that's confusing the facts of life with the acts of God. We do it in little minute ways, but we can also do it in big ways that damage and hurt and destroy people's faith. How many people walked away from those comments, scratching their head, wondering, is this really what God is about? Jesus said no. Did this man, born blind, because of a sin in his life? No. Don't confuse the facts of life with the acts of God. God works in ways we cannot understand, and the ways in which we try to reconcile in this life, we can never get it all fitting together perfectly. Sometimes it just doesn't mesh. That's the first thing. Here's the second thing. The second thing is that I try to keep in mind, living in this tension, is that God's delays are not always or necessarily God's denials. God's delays are not necessarily God's denials. We pray about something in great desperation. We simply have come to a place in our life where we don't know what to do. We don't know where to turn. We've done everything in our power, and we're desperate, and we're crying out to God, and the answer doesn't come. I've got a list of unanswered prayers a mile long, just like you, and I'm waiting for those things, and I'm wondering why it's taken God so long, and yet that doesn't mean that God has denied that, or that doesn't mean that God hasn't heard that. God's delays are not necessarily God's denials. What I've had to reconcile in my life is that God's sense of timing is not mine. God does not work on our calendar. God does not work within our time frame. Think of it like this. Around this time of year, when I was a kid, we would receive at our home in the mail this big, thick Montgomery Ward catalog. You already know where I'm going, don't you? And then we would also receive, now this is back in the day when it was snail mail, that's all we had. And then we would receive the JCPenney Christmas catalog. And then we would receive the Sears Christmas catalog. And you know what my brother and I would do? We would start dog-earing pages. We would start taking a red magic marker and circling the G.I. Joe sets we wanted. We made sure that every page dog-eared, everything circled. Once we were finished with that particular catalog, we would place it on the little table beside my father's lazy boy to make sure he saw it so he could get the information to the big man, the big guy with the beard and the sleigh, so that when Christmas morning came, we had identified what we wanted. And from the time those catalogs came until the time Christmas arrived, time moved so slow. I mean, it seemed like it took forever from the moment we started dogging in pages and started circling things. It seemed like it took forever. Isn't that different than when we're adults? Time seems to just fly by. When we're children, it's so slow. But when we're adults, it just flies by. And we say, you never hear a five-year-old say, "Where has all the time gone?" But we adults, where has all the time gone? What's my point? My point is this. What's the difference? You know the difference. As a child, we have no concept of how that works. We're just interested in what we want, what we need. But as an adult, we begin to recognize that if we don't savor every moment, time flies by. I'll turn around and my month-old grandson will be going to kindergarten. Time flies. It's a difference in understanding. Time hasn't changed. It's we who've changed. Our spiritual life is the same way. Most of the time, we approach God like a child with the Montgomery Ward catalog. And we've underlined things and we've circled things, we've dog-eared pages, and then when it doesn't work out like we want it and it doesn't happen fast enough, we're frustrated. And we need to recognize that God works in a different way. Oh, how helpful that's been to me. God's delays are not necessarily God's denials. Last but not least, don't confuse the facts of life with the acts of God. God's delays are not necessarily God's denials. And then here's the third one. We need to understand that our grievances can blind us to the grace of God that is at work around us. We'll say that again. Our grievances, our anger, our frustration, our pain, our woundedness, it can blind us to the grace of God that is at work around us. God is at work. Scripture teaches us, Jesus shows us that God is at work, and sometimes we can't see it because we're blinded by our own pain. We're blinded by our own grievances. A man walked into a flower shop one day, and he was looking to buy an arrangement for a friend who was ill. And he was kind of looking around at his options, and the door opened, and this woman walked in, and she walked right up to the counter. And the florist, he saw her, nodded. He went around behind the curtain and came back out, and he was holding this strange arrangement in his hand. The man kind of glanced at it, and then he looked at it again. He couldn't believe it. It was this beautiful vase, or a vase, whatever you prefer, had a ribbon around it. And in this vase were all of these thorn branches with all of the roses missing. All of the roses were gone. It was just this collection of thorns and branches beautifully arranged in this vase. The woman paid for it, smiled and said, "Thank you so much," and off she went. Now, he had to ask, so would you, I would. He stepped up and said, "Wait a minute, this woman got an arrangement of thorns with no roses." He says, "Yes, it's called the bouquet of thorns." "Really?" he said, "Yes." He said, "Is that a popular thing?" He said, "You have no idea. People come and go from here all the time." He said, "Would you like to know how it started?" "Yes." He said, "Some time ago, I had a very difficult time in my life, and I discovered that as a florist, all of my life was not roses. And so I took a collection of thorns and branches, and I organized them as therapy for myself. And people found out about it, and now they want them." He said, "I've attached a little card to each bouquet of thorns. Here's a card," and he handed a man the card that goes on the bouquet of thorns, and the man read these words, "God, I have never thanked you for my thorns. I have thanked you 1,000 times for my roses, but never for my thorns. When I read that strange story, I kept thinking, I know that from somewhere, and so I started researching. It actually, that phrase, that little statement, God, I never thanked you for my roses. I mean, for my thorns, I thanked you 1,000 times for my roses, but never for my thorns. It came from a poem that was written by George Matheson. George Matheson, in the late 1800s, was a Scottish preacher and theologian at the University of St. Andrews in Edinburgh, Scotland. One of the most powerful preachers of his day. When he was 20 years of age, studying for the ministry, he started going blind. The doctors couldn't help him. He was engaged to be married, and his fiancée said, I cannot spend the rest of my life with a blind man. So she broke off the engagement. Matheson never married. He went on with his life. He studied for the ministry. He became a theologian and a scholar. And some years later, he sat down one day and wrote his testimony in verse. He wrote a hymn. That hymn that he wrote is number 480 in our hymnal. It's entitled, O Love That Will Not Let Me Go. George Matheson said that in his darkness, in his blindness, he discovered the grace of God's love that would not let him go. Don't you see the irony? His fiancée said, I'm done, I'm out, I'm through. And yet the love of God sustained him in that moment. Matheson would say, I cannot explain why at 20 years of age I went blind. But what I can say is that through it all, God's love has not let me go. Everything happens for a reason? No, not if God is the reason for everything. But in everything we experience, there is a divine love that will hold us, that will grasp us, that will sustain us. It is a love that will not let you go. Stop blaming God for everything and let Him love you. Stop being angry at God for what you can't explain and let Him love you. Don't be blinded with your grievances. The grace of God is at work around you if you're willing to see it. Jordan Matheson saw what we cannot see with our own earthly eyes, a love that will not let us go. That love will hold you tightly and is holding you tightly today. Whatever you're going through, whatever you're dealing with, whatever you're putting up with, whatever is hurting you, whatever has wounded you, that love will not let you go today or ever. Thanks be to God. And He can open our eyes and we can see His grace at work in the world around us.